Welcome, everybody, to Parshas Truma. It's a very difficult Parsha. It's very difficult to find the meaning in a way that speaks to us when you're reading a Parsha of something which seems obsolete. And in a certain sense, it is. In a literal sense, the construction of the tabernacle is not something that we have to ever do. We're never going to be called upon to build the Mishkan again. We will have a temple, but our tradition assures us that the temple will be built, first of all, not in these dimensions, not in the same materials. It will be much, much greater and much more glorious. But more importantly, it will be built by Hashem. So we're not even going to have to do anything in the construction, in the literal sense. But it's still here. And not only is this Parsha about the Mishkan, but the next Parsha is about the service in the Mishkan, the vestments of the Kohanim, of the Kohen Gadol, the High Priest, and the other priests, and several other parshios in the book of Shemos are repeating the same idea, same themes as Truma and Tetzaveh. And the Torah is obviously trying to tell us something. I was actually revisiting some of the CDs that were recorded of our previous discussions, some very nice insights by Rav Dessler and Rav Yerucham Levavitz, of blessed memory. And I would just like to try to revisit what I think is at the core. The purpose of the Mishkan is stated, really, at the beginning of the Parsha, and this is often quoted when studying this Parsha, "De asu li mikdash de shachanti besocham." They shall make a sanctuary for me, says Hashem, and I will dwell among them. The purpose of the Mishkan is a dwelling place for Hashem. That has obvious difficulties because Hashem is not physical. Hashem doesn't need a place to live. He doesn't need to find a house or an apartment. That's number one. Number two, there is a long-standing debate amongst the commentators whether the Mishkan is something ideal or whether the Mishkan is some type of a concession. I'm sure that this is the focus of the commentating notes here. The notes here in the bottom of the Stone Chumash at the beginning of Truma cites the sources of this long-standing debate. Let me just do the background here. We had Yisro and Mishpatim, giving of the Torah, the Ten Commandments, followed by the Mishpatim, the laws. Then we have the Parsha of Truma, the instructions to build the tabernacle. And Tetzaveh is about the Kohanim. Then you have the Parsha of Kisisa. Kisisa contains the account of the golden calf. And the rest of the book of Shmos is either about the golden calf or the Mishkan. And it says here in the footnotes, even the account of the golden calf is not unrelated to the tabernacle, for according to Sephorno, one of the classic commentators, the very construction of the tabernacle was made necessary only because of Israel's lapse into virtual idolatry. He maintains that ideally, no temple should have been needed after the revelation at Sinai, because the entire nation achieved the level of prophecy, and every Jew was worthy for the Shekhinah, the divine presence, to rest upon him, as it later did on the tabernacle and the temple. Ideally, says the Sepharno, we shouldn't have needed the Mishkan. Indeed, the Shachanti Besocham, I will dwell among them, would have been natural among the people. Hashem would be in everybody's heart. Everybody would walk around and be aware of the presence of Hashem. You wouldn't need an address. But only after Israel toppled from that high level of spirituality, as a result of the worship of the golden calf, did it become necessary for it to have a central sanctuary. So it was a concession. The Mishkan is not the ideal, according to Sephorno. Even Rashi seems to agree with that, because Moshe did not relay these instructions until after the incident of the golden calf, Rashi explains. It's surprising, but the Mishkan is something that was a reaction to the incident of a sin. The Ramban, on the other hand, he explains that the Mishkan is an integral part of the redemption from Egypt. It would not have been complete, even though we physically left the land of Egypt, even though we received the Ten Commandments, it would not have been complete until we had the Mishkan. According to Ramban, the Mishkan is a permanent part of existence. It's symbolic of the historic experience at Mount Sinai. The tabernacle was intended to be the central rallying point of the nation. Just as Mount Sinai was the central point of the nation and its beginning, the Mishkan would be the continuity of that central meeting point of the Jews. So we have here a big debate and a big confusing message. The Mishkan is not an ideal, according to Sepharno. The Mishkan is vital to the continuity of the Jewish people, according to the Ramban. Which is it? So we have a problem. What does it mean that God needs a place to dwell? We have a confusing mixed message between the commentators if the Mishkan is good, is an ideal thing, or not an ideal thing. That's confusing. And on top of that, I would just add my own question. After having learned for the past several weeks, really since we started the book, the Jewish people gained the knowledge of God in Egypt. They became aware of his might. They became aware of his involvement in the world. They became aware of the way he communicates through prophets like Moshe. They became aware that one day we would be receiving the Torah. They actually received the Torah. They learned how to trust in Hashem. They learned how to pray to Hashem. They learned that the laws of the Torah is all-encompassing. They would apply the laws even to their daily lives in the form of the Mishpatim. And there would also be religious observances such as Shabbos and the holidays. It seems like the whole program was there. It seems like a complete formula for Judaism was set in place. Why do we in fact need anything more? Why do we need a Mishkan? Why is it so vital? Let's just keep the commandments. Why do we need a special place to go? Let's just live life according to the Torah, between man and God, between man and man, and that would be sufficient. Similar to what we do now. Maybe our shuls have the status of a temple of sorts, but why would it be necessary? And one more thing, which I forgot to say. Years ago, when I was teaching a Parsha class, I had read a comment by the Hasidic author, the Shemi Shmuel. And what the Shemi Shmuel says is he quotes these two opposing views. Well, they seem to be opposing. Sepharno says that the Mishkan is not the ideal. It was only on a lower level because we fell to the calf. And the other opinion of the Ramban, that it is the ideal, the continuity of the experience of Sinai. The Shemi Shmuel says that there's no real dispute here. The reason there's no dispute is because they're both right, because there are two levels of Mishkan. There's the lower level of the Mishkan, and then there's the higher level of the Mishkan. I'm not talking about two stories. There are two aspects to the Mishkan. In one way, there's a lower level, it is not the ideal. In the other aspect, it is the ideal. This is what the Shemi Shmuel says. But what does that mean? So this year, you know that we're not learning any new commentators as a rule. We're trying to integrate and understand what we know so far. And I gave a lot of thought to this. What does it mean? Yes, a Mishkan, no a Mishkan, they're both right. What exactly is this all about? So this is, with Hashem's help, the way I understand it. And we always go back to the beginning. The beginning is that the purpose of life is to come to gain knowledge and awareness of God. This is what the Ramban says when he taught us the order of the Ten Commandments, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. This is the purpose, the beginning, and the end of the Torah and the purpose of life. Rabbi Lozato says it, that we're here to achieve, to earn goodness by relating to God, which has to come through our own discovery. And there's many ways that one can achieve that goal. The ideal way to achieve that goal is just by observing the ways of God God doesn't reveal it, He doesn't make it obvious, but He makes it doable. He gives us a choice, but He makes it possible to observe. Once in a while, He injects, Hisarusa de la'ela, He throws in some open miracles and open signs to make us see the truth. But He gave us the intelligence, the heart, to be able to take that awareness and to develop it further, and to be able to choose between good and evil, and to be able to discern the truth of His existence. And these are some of the things we discussed, that we learned in Egypt, the 13 principles of faith, what we talked about 2 weeks ago with Rabbi Tatz, the knowledge, not faith, but knowledge, Yediyas Hashem, trusting in Hashem. These are things that we are capable of doing. To help us in this endeavor, we have laws that point us in the direction that there's a God, and that we are responsible for each other, and that really everything emanates from God. God is Yachid. He is the single existence of the world. Everything emanates from Him. It's all in there. It is possible for us, in other words, to have total focus, to focus on the truth of Hashem Echad. It's possible. This is where the Jewish people were at Mount Sinai. They had both primed themselves through their experiences, through their choices, and they were helped by God to see it fully. But, as we said, we have a choice. We also have the potential to forget this. We have the potential to break everything down, to fragmentize everything, so that we don't see Hashem. We just see little pieces. We see a person, we see an event, we don't connect them. Sometimes Hashem sees that we need help, as we mentioned. In fact, the Jewish people sometimes think they need help. Would you believe that the sin of the golden calf was the Jewish people looking for help? They felt, without Moshe, that they were losing focus. And so they decided to call upon Aaron HaKohen, who was the wisest, most righteous man, and ask him, now there were some people that were trying to do idolatry, but ask him to help us create something for us that will help us focus. Now, there's a problem with when you get something to help you focus. There are two problems I see in a focal point to remind you of God. I'm going to make a crude analogy to medication. Let's say a person has a certain illness that he needs to take a medication. The medication could work wonders, and it could help him or help the body heal. But sometimes medications have other effects. One effect could be that it could cause him to hallucinate, which means rather than the medication helping him get healed, it actually takes him farther away. It makes him imagine something other than reality. That's where the medication can make him worse. Another thing that could happen with the medication is that it doesn't make it worse, but it doesn't make him better, just ineffective. The problem with us making the Egel was that we were making our own focal point without Hashem's direction, without a prescription. That's like taking medication without a prescription. So it doesn't matter what our intentions are. If our intentions are to help us focus on God, it's not going to work if we don't have the right prescription. And that was the problem with the Chet HaEgel, the Egel HaZahav. So that's got to be eliminated. But then sometimes Hashem will give us that focal point. He can say to us, okay, I see that you're having a hard time focusing. I will give you something to rally around. This will be in the form of the Mishkan. This is the medication. Now there's two warnings, indications. It's written on the side of the bottle. Number one, if you start to hallucinate, then you have to stop taking this medication. Number two, if it stops being effective, you will also have to stop taking the medication. So in translating that into the Mishkan, if the Mishkan starts to lead you down other pathways, and it doesn't bring you closer to me, but it brings you farther away from me, we'll have to get rid of it. And this indeed happened in the Navi and the prophets, where they had the temple, and some of the kings actually went down the path of idolatry. Similar to how the Jewish people went down the wrong path with the calf. And then there were times when we had the temple or the Mishkan, and it just didn't arouse us. It was supposed to be there to help us focus on God, and sometimes it just didn't. Maybe we were bringing the sacrifices mindlessly. It just wasn't working. And Hashem says, I will only give you this medication, this medicine, if it's going to help you, not if it's going to hurt you, and not if it's going to be ineffective. But this is what we refer to as the lower level of the Mishkan. This is what the Sfarno speaks about as the concession. If the Jews didn't need it, they would have just focused on God on their own, through the mitzvahs, through the mind and the heart, and focusing and making proper choices. Everything would have been fine. If they need some help, Hashem will give us the Mishkan. But only if the Mishkan works. There's no guarantee. Now, it could be that the Jewish people will be inspired and aroused, and they will develop internally. They will develop themselves from the external stimulus of the Mishkan into people that truly know God. Well connected. Everything is integrated, both in their religious life and their social life and everything is great. If the Jewish people really live with God, so then we can merit the Mishkan that the Ramban is talking about, where there's so much reality of God in the Jewish people that Hashem's Shekhinah really deserves to be there, because we actually bring Him down. And therefore the Ramban is also true, that there is such an ideal as the Jewish people being on such a level as they were at Har Sinai, that there would be a natural continuation of having Hashem's presence among us. That would be on the higher level. And this perhaps is what the Shem Yishmuel was saying. There's a lower level where Hashem gives us the Mishkan to help us focus because we're not doing it on our own. And then after we start to do it on our own and we internalize it, we can actually bring the Shekhinah from ourselves, effect that the Shekhinah will be among us. It reminds me, to illustrate this a little bit more, of the Gemara that talks about the different psalms King David wrote. And if you look through the book of Tehillim, there's often a phrase that starts it off. It says, Mizmor LeDavid, a song of David. Well, there's also psalms that say, LeDavid Mizmor, to David a song. So the Talmud asks in Pesachim, how come some are Mizmor LeDavid and some are LeDavid Mizmor? And the answer is because the psalms are King David's songs of praise to Hashem. And David also was a person that embodied Ruach HaKodesh, Divine Spirit. Sometimes David was on the level of Ruach HaKodesh. He's not always on that level of Ruach HaKodesh, but sometimes he was. And the Ruach HaKodesh inspired him to write the song. And that song would be called LeDavid Mizmor. First there was David, i.e. first David was on his higher level, and out of that came the Mizmor. Out of that came the song. Other times, David was not on this level of Ruach HaKodesh. He was under a lot of pressure for something, and he couldn't actually get to that level of Ruach HaKodesh. So what did he do? He composed a song. And through this song, he was able to bring himself back up to the level of Ruach HaKodesh. That's called Mizmor LeDavid. First comes the song, and out of that song comes David, the man of Ruach HaKodesh. That's how I understand this. We have a certain level, call it whatever you want, we have the ability, the capacity of really knowing and connecting with Hashem. But it's not presumed that we will automatically be on that level. So Hashem provides us with a song or a stimulus, some focal point, something that is material. It's got specific parameters to it, and it has to be prescribed by the doctor himself. But the Mishkan, like the song, can bring us up to the level of connection and awareness of God. And then we have the capacity, with that connection and level of awareness of God, to create even a higher plateau, a higher level of divine presence. In other words, we've spoken about this before, there's the influence that Hashem gives us, and then the influence which we create from ourselves. That is the cycle of these two levels, of these two commentaries. And it has its pitfalls, as we said before. So to sum it all up, this could sound like just philosophical jargon. But to me, you know, to try to think about the implications of all this, we are living, obviously, in a time where we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, which means we have to assume that we are not yet bringing down the Shekhinah to the full extent, because of our own level, I mean in the Jewish world. And also, apparently, Hashem doesn't yet believe that if were He to bring a Beis HaMikdash right now, that we would necessarily use it to bring ourselves up to the level that we're supposed to be. So that means we don't have the higher level Mishkan and we don't have the lower level Mishkan. So where does that leave us? That leaves us that we have nothing other than ourselves to inspire ourselves to go back to the raw materials that we are given, the mind, the heart, the hands. We must find the awareness and the inspiration by observing the hand of God in our lives, albeit hidden, realizing that Hashem is still there, although He is hidden. That is really the message of the holiday of Purim, which is almost upon us. That even in the darkest hour, even in the far-flung provinces of the world, Hashem is there. He is pulling strings for us, but we have to inspire ourselves, just as the Jews of Persia. They got together, they fasted, they did teshuvah. We must utilize the experience of hashkacha, practice of a divine intervention, all around us, personally and communally. We, of course, must utilize and maximize the tools that we were given at Har Sinai, which last forever, in the Torah, through tefillah, the avoda, service of God, and gemilus chasadim, and acts of kindness. We've got to try to jumpstart. We were not given that medium. We were not given the Mishkan. But we were given other tools. So, if we want to really live life for its purpose, and we want to bring this show to its proper climax and its proper closure, we must utilize our tools to focus on God. I believe that having the mitzvahs and knowing that, yeah, these are the mitzvahs that we do, without having these parshios, which tell us what's the focus again. Remember, it's not just go through the motions. It is, the focus is Hashem among us? V'shachanti b'socham. Is Hashem in our mind? Is Hashem in our heart? Do we realize that there is an ultimate purpose that we're all here for, that we're all part of? We have to utilize the tools that we have to strive for that purpose. We can be assured that if we make that effort, Hashem will respond by helping us. Just as He helped the Jewish people climb out of their pit that they dug with the golden calf by giving them the Mishkan, Hashem will give us that assistance too. And therefore, we will be able to hoist ourselves based on that even further to the point where we can be zoche, we can merit the higher madrega, the higher level of the Beis HaMikdash, where Hashem is actually in our midst, not artificially so, but because we made Him so, because we accepted Him into our hearts, into our minds. And this will be the culmination, the building of the final Beis HaMikdash, which will be, of course, will be the Ramban type of Beis HaMikdash. And this is what we are focusing for. So the purpose of these parshios is really, is key, is crucial. Stopping Sefer Shmos after Mishpatim is like having the tools without the instructions, without realizing what we're supposed to do with them. What is the purpose? The purpose is to bring Hashem into our midst. We have the tools, and if we use them and get as far as we can, Hashem will help us, and we will be able to build further and further on that. Wait. That's how you understand Parshas Truma. Thank you.
Based on what you said, these two different levels, two different things, and that we're given the instructions here before the telling of the golden calf thing, and then it's said all over again afterwards,
mm-hmm.
So Moshe explains it. Is it possible that if the people hadn't panicked and done the golden calf, they would have celebrated when Moshe came down, and they would have wanted to do something for Hashem, and then these instructions would have been given at that point?
And then they would have gone straight to the higher level of the...
That's what I'm wondering.
Yeah,
I
think so.
The instructions are mentioned first, and then you have the golden calf thing, and then there's this question, was it the remedy, or was it a thing? Is that...
Right. The way that the Shem Yishmuel is resolving this is by saying that Hashem, right after Sinai, gave the instructions on how to build a Mishkan, and it has these two dimensions to it. And then it would be up to us which dimension we would take. Had we not committed the sin of the golden calf, then we would have gone straight to the higher level of the Mishkan, where we would have just merited Hashem's presence. The fact that we fell, Hashem said, and we're going to use the same instructions because physically they're the same, but it's now going to be on the lower level. It's now going to be as a a help to pull the people out, to inspire them, and that's why he had to give the instructions that way.
I heard from Rabbi Chernovsky this morning that if we hadn't built the golden calf, the Egel Zahav, then we would have been able to go straight into Eretz Yisrael with the Mishkan. Moshe Rabbeinu would have been the Mashiach for us. And then it would have made sense. That would have been the beginning of our Beit HaMikdash. I mean, the Mishkan would have been. The Aron actually never, ever had the staves removed from it. Everything else had the staves removed. Not the Aron, because wherever the Jewish people went, that was a sign that it had to come with us. It had to always be present. But we would have gone straight to Eretz Yisrael, not had to have 40 years of people dying off. And that would have been the end of the story.
The first and the second temples, I'm assuming, were on the lower level, even though it was on a very high level. But Hashem was giving us a very, very big assistance there with the trust that we would use it for good. Now, it happened throughout history that those pitfalls happened, you know, that either we went into idolatry or it just stopped being effective. But that was originally the plan. And the third Beis HaMikdash will have to be on the higher level, and that's why it's taking so long, because we have to at least show Hashem that we are making the effort to arouse ourselves, to inspire ourselves, and then He can once again give us that assistance to help us grow higher.
These people that are building the Beit HaMikdash or getting things prepared, are they against what you've just talked about, or are they...
You know, it depends on their kavanas. Everything depends on the intent. If the intent is... is a kind of a crude expression, whatever turns you on. In other words, if this really inspires you to bring Hashem into your life, to become more focused and aware, then good. You know, you can't convince everybody that this is what they've got to do. I don't think traditionally we believe that we're going to build the Beis HaMikdash. Maybe they're just doing the Kalim. Spiritually speaking, Hashem doesn't need our help to weave clothing, right? What He needs us to do is to v'shachanti b'socham, to get Hashem into our lives, however we do that. If that helps, then do that. If it helps to study Torah, do that. We've got lots of mitzvahs to do. We shouldn't focus only on one thing, just like we shouldn't just focus on Mashiach coming. I mean, that's true, but there's a whole Torah that has to be observed. So that's the basic idea. Good Shabbos. Very good. Thank you. Good Shabbos. Yashar Koach.